Okay, let's begin on slide 25. The next step to getting to know thyself, specifically how to become more aware of our biases and begin to address emotions such as shame and defensiveness that might be coming up. So first, I think it's important to be able to identify our blind spots and biases. And there are a lot of ways of doing this. I think even just reading about this topic, reading about privilege, reading about biases, in graduate school, a lot of us learned about our own blind spots, but catching ourselves up on the research and readings about this is probably something that would be helpful. I included, though, on this slide a link to something called Diversity Leadership 360, and it's a 360 assessment where you can have those around you in the workplace, those with whom you work, let you know, essentially give you feedback on where they think your blind spots are and how culturally competent you are as a leader. So this is just a tool to consider using if you're wanting to get other people's perspectives. More informally, it can also be useful just to ask people. If you think that you could get an honest answer, it'd be good to ask people in your life just if they've noticed that you have any blind spots or kind of limiting ways of thinking or ways of thinking that might be harmful or that could reflect a bias. Again, in grad school, I think a lot of this is super common. We do this all the time, but I think then once we get licensed as psychologists, we sometimes become a little bit more isolated and we stop doing those formal or informal self-assessments. Number two, is defensiveness, and this is pretty difficult to address, but crucial to address if we're going to be addressing microaggressions. And when I think about this, I think about judgmentalness. So when I think about being defensive, I think about being judgmental in some ways. So being judgmental of something that someone is telling me that I want to distance myself from. So we think about mindfulness practice and some basic tenets of mindfulness. One of them is non-judgment. So, you know, you be present in the moment and we want to be self-aware. Another thing that we really focus on is taking that non-judgmental stance. And a big reason for that is that judgment distances us from ourselves. So if you think about going to the grocery store and seeing a woman maybe with a child who is screaming, and you feel that twinge of judgment. When we're judging that woman in a grocery store, what we're really wanting to say to ourselves is that I'm not like her. I would handle that situation better. My kid would never do that. Or maybe we're telling ourselves I would never have kids, so I would never put myself in a situation to have to deal with that. And when we're judging others, such as in that example, we're trying to make ourselves separate from that person, and we're trying to distance ourselves. And the reason why in mindfulness practice, non-judgment is such an important component of practice is because when we begin judging our own experiences or judging ourselves, the impact is really the same. We start distancing ourselves from ourselves. And when we're distant from ourselves, we're not self-aware anymore. So judgment and emotions related to that, such as guilt or defensiveness or shame, these are all emotions that are going to distance us from ourselves and further blind us to our own biases and microaggressions that we might be committing. So defensiveness, shame, guilt are all emotions that need to be managed if we're to continue growing. And remember that we are asking our clients to do this in therapy sessions, so it'd be great for us to model this as clinicians as well and to not shy away from these reactions. I've seen a lot of times in especially racial dialogue where someone will get offended by what is being said because they're relating it back to themselves and they begin to feel defensive as though they're being attacked or their gender or their race is being attacked, and it tends to shut down the dialogue completely. And it really doesn't result in any progress being made. So this is oftentimes a conversation stopper. And the same thing goes in the context of a therapy session. If you bristle up, if you seem defensive, and you shut down the conversation, then you've missed an opportunity to address something that's probably pretty important to the client. So in terms of how to do this, This is probably a long process, but in terms of addressing shame, I recommended Brené Brown's website. So this is one of the top experts in addressing shame in therapy. So this is another example of a resource that we might use when working with our clients, but that we can also apply to ourselves. And Brené Brown talks a lot about openness and vulnerability and empathy as being ways to counter shame, I guess, to put it simply. But check out her work. She does a lot of great work in how to address shame. I also included here a video called Making Whiteness Visible. And this video features stories from white men and women on overcoming issues of unconscious bias and entitlement. So kind of how other people have worked through this, maybe other people that are similar to yourself in some way. I think it can be helpful just to see that other people struggle with this and ways that they are handling this and addressing their own biases and their own feelings of entitlement and then other feelings such as, you know, guilt and shame and that kind of thing. And finally, recommend Deconstructing Privilege, Teaching and Learning as Allies in the Classroom, specifically Chapter 2, which is called Addressing Inequality and Injustice Without Shame or Blame. So just first of all, acknowledging that shame and blame and guilt, again, all these emotions really impede our ability to address microaggressions and to have thoughtful dialogue on these topics. So I think that's a good reference. It's a good starting point if you're, again, looking for ways to address these topics without letting an emotion like shame or defensiveness completely overcome you. And, you know, just notice these emotions when they come up in conversations, and remember that the most important thing, if you're in the middle of an important dialogue that's related to microaggressions of any sort, it may not be most important at that moment to have to, kind of in a public sense, reconcile or have others make you feel better about these emotions. And I realize that that sounds harsh, but I think that's true. I think when we hijack these conversations and we make it about ourselves when it's really about the experiences of others, then that is that reassertion of dominance and privilege, and it shuts everything down, and then we fail to be able to grow. And then these sorts of things, you know, microaggressions, continue to be perpetuated and cause more and more problems, which then inevitably leads to more discussions starting and then getting shut down, and frustrations understandably rise with time. So just a few recommendations for addressing biases and shame and defensiveness. The next slide, slide 26, I just threw this in here. This was in the New York Times, and what it is it's a visual depiction of high schoolers' reactions to privilege, and mostly white privilege, but other types of privilege as well. And you'll see how these high schoolers are responding to privilege. So you'll see, now I'm ashamed of my skin color. I helped build a school in, you know, Africa on my vacation. So that's the kind of, you know, I have diverse friends, I can't be racist because my friends are black, that kind of thing. Reverse racism is real, and my friend is white, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. My feelings are hurt. I didn't ask to be white. These kinds of things. So a lot of these examples we've talked a little bit about, or I've talked a little bit about already, or kind of made reference to at least. But what I thought was interesting about this is that these are comments by high school students. And this is probably what we'd expect of high school students, but interestingly, I've heard these exact same comments, or comments very similar to them, from people who are not high school students, from people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And I think what it shows is that when we're coming from a position of power, a privilege, and we belong to a privileged group, it can really be stunting. So that invisibility can really lead us to not examining ourselves more fully, diving into our own identities, questioning ourselves, questioning what we're doing and our intentions, and more than our intentions, what our impact is on other people. And so it's no wonder that these reactions, which are so probably developmentally appropriate for, you know, a 14-year-old, seem to be communicated also by people who are a whole lot older and who maybe we would expect to be a little bit more advanced and nuanced in their understanding of their own identities and other people's identities. So I just threw that in there kind of for that reason, just to kind of highlight that I think a lot of us, through not examining ourselves, can become stunted. And if you look at the next slide, slide 27, I threw this in because I think it communicates kind of just the ridiculousness of defensiveness when we're talking about microaggressions and someone who's been microaggressed against is talking about it or complaining about it or talking about the way it's impacted them. So in this cartoon, it shows, there's stick figures, but it shows a stick figure who is approaching another stick figure who's lying on the ground bleeding. And the person approaching says, "Well, what happened to you?" And the person bleeding on the ground says, "Some driver ran over me." So pause and think for a minute. What would be your initial reaction if this happened to you and you came across someone who's bleeding on the street who had been ran over by a driver? Most of us would want to help. Most of us would not feel defensive in any way coming upon that scene. But then the way the cartoon goes on is that the person who approached the injured person says, "Well, not all drivers run over people. I'm a driver and I never ran over anybody, so screw you." So became really, really defensive about this. It just, again, highlights the ridiculousness of it, just that in any other context we wouldn't be, we wouldn't be defensive, but somehow in this context we are.